All right, here we go. We ready?
I guess.
Welcome to M Vibes Podcast.
Home of good music,
good libations,
and good vibes.
Fuck yeah. Oh, welcome to M Vibes Podcast, Season 4, Episode 3. Today we're recording at a pretty special place, pretty cool place, Noda Brewing North End. We're right here in the brew house with Chad Henderson, so big metal fan, of course. Everyone knows he is a big part of Noda Brewing. You're part owner too, right?
Yes, I am. I'm part owner.
That's awesome. So we've got some awesome beers here. Of course, I can't drink their beers. This is actually funny. This was the place I was at when I found out I had celiac. I was outside drinking. It was the weekend you guys brought out the Girl Scout cookie beers.
Oh, really? And I was out. What a crappy time to realize that. Sorry.
Well, it was funny. No, I was out there and I was drinking a beer and I got the voicemail on my phone that said, hey, your blood work came back positive for celiac. I didn't even know what the hell it was at the time. I had to go online and look it up. I'm like, oh, well, shit. All right, guys, this is my last beer.
I'm glad we were, I don't know, that's a weird honor to have, but.
No,
so happy you could drink your last beer here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, thanks.
Well, I actually think I had one more afterwards. I'm like, fuck it. So,
yeah. Gotcha.
I couldn't leave without that Samoa one.
Oh yeah, that was our most popular one by a lot. Yeah.
Love that beer.
Yeah, it's a good beer.
Anyways, what are you guys drinking? So I know Chad made some pretty cool metal themed beers.
Yeah, so it was kind of like metal inspired, I guess is the best way to put it. We have Ernest. I have his beer that I have on for him is the Captain Peanut Butter's Chocolate Revenge, which is equally in part a kind of pseudo comical name. Just we like to kind of make fun of overly serious names and stuff. You guys are about 2 weeks short of probably my favorite named one that I've had for a while, which is a double IPA called Vampire Walrus.
Oh,
and the whole label and everything behind
it.
Yeah, it's awesome. It's really good. I did it on the pilot system about 6 months ago and it really took off. And people are like, where does the name come from? I'm like, it's just a stupid name. It's just, I wanted to do something that was like redundant and that's where it came from. But that's kind of the same idea with the Captain Peanut Butter's Chocolate Revenge. We want it to be big and peanut buttery and chocolatey and just in your face, but also like kind of take itself too seriously. And that's kind of the funny part of it. But the other thing that we're drinking, I actually just finished our Cascadian Dark Ale or Black IPA debate in the comments on which one it should be called. But called In Darkness Binds Them, which is a play on, it's like a double pun. One, it's a reference to Lord of the Rings, and the last line of the One Ring is "And in darkness binds them." But it's, we spell bind instead of bind. It's B-I-N-E-S. So binds, just like what a hop grows on. So it's a brewer pun and a nerd reference. So hooray! and then I have I do a lot of like side series here, and this one, I don't know if you would consider it metal. I just think that anything that you kind of take and like try to be authentic and then also creative with it too is kind of cool. And I've been really delving into doing really historically referenced styles down to like really, really paying attention to minor stuff like matching water chemistries and really exact types of grain bills and things like that for like more traditional things. Like we have a side pull, Bishepni, which is a session Czech pils on draft right now called Provocative, which is its own thing. But this is our lager in the woods series, which is a semi project that I have where I had all these fresh barrels that we had just emptied from our Monstro release that were really nice and wet when we got them originally. And I was like, I don't want to waste these things when we empty them in a couple weeks. And so I was like, I don't have anything to put in them. I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I did some really true to style lagers that also, instead of going through their traditional lagering style, I would actually rack them into the freshly emptied barrels and let them lager through the winter just in the ambient cold of the brew house in wood. So I made the Lagered in the Wood series. So I'm drinking part one of that, which is a Vienna lager. It's like 5.3% alcohol, but the whiskey notes that come through on it are really, man, really cool and match up really awesome with the maltiness. And then I have a Doppelbach that'll be part two that we released at the either end of summer, beginning of fall, somewhere around there. It's about 8%. And I have a Baltic Porter, which tastes crazy in it right now. So man. That, and then we have my most metal referenced one is I'm doing also a kind of Scandinavian Norse mythology themed series. And this is the first release of it that if you made it to Brawley's Black and Blue, it debuted there and we had it briefly on draft. And I have the rest of it in the tank behind us in the small system. But it's Twilight of the Thunder God.
Oh, yeah.
And it is a 10.5% Norse Imperial Stout aged in whiskey barrels. And the reason why we call it Norse or Nordic is it's a raw ale, basically meaning it's not boiled. So a lot of the starch chains and stuff stay intact. So it gives it this really hearty, cereally sort of character to it. And it's kind of how all beer was originally made, I guess. Yeah. But like it's the one kind of thing that the Scandinavian drinking cultures in their farmhouse beers, they still continue it today. And a lot of times it's replicated in like sauties and things like that. And it's a really hard flavor to kind of describe to people, but it has a very nutty raw cereal character altogether. And on an Imperial style, it really kind of just girths it up a good bit. And it gives it this really like raw grain character. And then you couple that with the whiskey barrel aging for like 9 months. And it's a really formidable beer at 10.5%, but it's still kind of not like chocolatey, velvety smooth, but like really rich, like cake battery sort of smooth. So
without boiling it, how long does it take for it to ferment then?
It's because it's on Kvæg yeast, you want to say it. Which is again another part of the tradition.
I've heard it both ways.
Yeah. It's technically, from what I've seen from interviews, you there isn't like one right way to say it because it's like a slang term, and depending on where you are, it's right or wrong depending. But I ferment on Hornedal yeast, which is one of the types of Kvæg yeast, and it ferments out to 10.5% alcohol in 2 days.
So, oh, really?
Yeah, it takes no time. What I do when you're doing the raw style, part of the thing that everyone asks with that, if they're brewers, is like, oh, what about DMS? You're not blowing out the DMS. Well, DMS is only made from its predecessor of SMS, and SMS doesn't form unless you get above like around like 178. Okay. So if you keep it at like 168 to 172-ish, you can still sterilize the wort by holding it there for like an hour and a half or 2 hours. In this case, we did 2.5 hours of like a hot steep. So it sterilizes it, but it never forms the predecessor to DMS. Okay. So it never comes out. So that's kind of like the trick with it. And also, and if you look at like the articles on how the people in Scandinavia do the raw ales, they have like the most arbitrary, like they brew them like in their kitchen, like in these troughs. And like this is the guy doing like the research on it. There's literally like temp probing it constantly. And he's like, it's hitting like 170 on the dot, like every single time I poke at it. Like, and they have like no way of maintaining it at all. It's just, you know, generations of doing the same thing over and over again. So, but it takes only a couple of days to get to 10.5% alcohol. Then we throw it in the barrel for 9 months and then it comes out like this.
Wow.
And of course the Twilight of the Thunder God references Thor's final battle in Ragnarok to Jormungandr, the world serpent. And what I like about it is like a lot of people think about it and when they look at the traditional like story or the retelled story of Ragnarok as being kind of like the good god versus the evil serpent right. thing.
Yes.
Which is really kind of like a rechristianization of it. But if you look at like the more historical text of it, Thor is kind of the protector of the people of Earth. And Jormungandr is kind of seen as a Earth protector entity in its own right, but he's more so oriented to nature. So it's literally like a protector of mankind versus a protector of nature kind. And they both kill each other in the Ragnarok. So the kind of poetic part of it is that like going forward, the next generation of mankind going after Ragnarok have to decide whose scale is going to tip. Is it nature or man? Because both of those entities that were the guardians of them both eliminate each other. So cool stuff. And it's also the name of a Monomarth song, which I am a huge fan of. So.
I got the shirt on today, so. I wore it just for today. Because today, not only are we talking about awesome beer, we're going to talk about the metal episode. There's a lot to get to. We won't get to it all. So if you're listening and we don't cover something that you think we should have, don't be mad. We'll probably do another metal episode at some point.
We definitely should.
Yes. I want to start out, though, with what I consider the greatest metal song of all time. Nice. War Pigs.
Oh, that's a great song.
Yeah.
I love playing it too. I'm pacing.
This is awesome, man. I think this was probably my first metal album that I got. I don't even remember where I got it. I think my uncle gave it to me.
Nice.
And then you know, from here, Black Sabbath, you know, through high school, metal is my roots. That's where I started out.
Right.
And then, you know, punk rock and everything else came afterwards. But heavy metal was always something that I've loved. You can't not talk about Metallica at some point, but, you know, metal has evolved.
Oh, yeah.
Immensely over since it started out. So you got so many genres of metal. And all the, you know, the metal that's popular now is completely different.
Night and day different.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was just saying, too, that like this song, especially the intro of it, shows why one of the most underrated bassists of all time is Geezer Butler.
Yes.
He's just such a great, groovy team player, and he never gets credit on how freaking good and tight he is and stuff.
Absolutely.
He just sits in the back and just rocks it the whole time. So.
I just went to Atlanta, and we went and saw, it was Creeping Death, Sacred Reich, Municipal Waste, and Carcass.
Yeah.
Great show. Awesome show. Awesome lineup. But four entirely different types of metal. It was awesome.
For sure.
It was a weird venue, though. If you've ever been to the Masquerade Atlanta, it's kind of like the Epicenter downtown, but it's just three venues in the bottom. Kind of like how we have the Fillmore here with the Underground. There's like Heaven, Hell, and I forget what the other one is, but the show we saw was in Heaven. And you walk in, it's like concrete pillars. You're in the basement of some place, seeing an awesome show. It was spacious enough, so it was cool.
Nice.
I was in there moshing, and some dude, he had the most badass battle vest ever. He made a Motorhead vest, but he put like fake chains, plastic chains, on the back of his vest, and I was like, dude, that's so fucking badass. Nice. That was awesome. So who were some of your favorite metal bands?
It depends on what time of life you go to. So I have a weird journey through music. So I grew up listening to like oldies, like beach music and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And by grow up, I mean like being like a little tiny kid. But like I was exposed to music, thankfully, very early on in my life. Cause my dad was one of the nation's top ranked Elvis impersonators.
No shit.
Yeah. So he passed a few years ago, but he was all up until his death. He was credited as being one of the first five Elvis tribute artists is kind of the PC term in the realm. My dad called himself an illusionist because his whole goal was to try to bring the illusion of Elvis still back on stage and stuff. Yes. And he had his own theater. He did solo shows where he would have his own like pre-recorded, essentially like a really high end karaoke essentially. And then he also had like his core band and his like full band, which was like a 14 piece band, horn section and all that sort of stuff. And got to tour around with him from pretty much as a toddler all the way up through college years and stuff. And so, you know, him being so obsessed in music and stuff, he taught me early on to be like, hey, you know, do you hear how great the drum is on that? Do you hear how great the bass is on that? And you know, I appreciated all that music. I still appreciate a lot of it today. And I have an absurd amount of knowledge about Elvis stuff just because of proxy to him and everything. But you know, when I was in, the thing that changed me, and I don't remember what it was, when The Matrix came out, I didn't see it in the theaters, but my friends, when we were in middle school, we went to like a cabin, like vacation thing as a group of friends of ours, like one of my friends' parents, like had a little cabin up in Boone. We all went up there and we had rented on VHS test tape, which is one of the oldest sayings I could say right now. and you know, they had all the previews before that. And we had The Matrix on there and they had The Matrix soundtrack preview for it. Mm-hmm. And in the middle, and at that time, I think the heaviest stuff I listened to was like Goo Goo Dolls or some shit. Stuff that was on the radio at the time. And I had such a hard time like liking modern music. And I liked, you know, I also at the same time being like exposed to Elvis and stuff like that, I was listening to, because of my dad, like Stevie Ray Vaughan and like all these like really cool, like classic rock guys and stuff. And none of that would play on any modern radio and stuff. So I'm just trying to like stuff. And I'm like, I just don't like, you know, like Smash Mouth is okay, I guess. I don't know. I was just like, I was trying to fit in. And then they started playing the album for The Matrix, and Rob Zombie Dracula came on.
Yeah.
And I was like, what the hell is that? And I was like, got so like, it was like the shockwave like hit me. And I was like, rewind it. Like I pissed off my friends. I was like, no, I want to hear it. And it was like a 2 second clip, yeah. You know, but just the heaviness and the drop of it and everything like that. I was like, got obsessed with it. And then the first album I bought that was of metal music was Metallica's Symphony Metallica, the S&M.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I just loved it. Awesome. And yes. So that was probably the most single influential album, because that kind of shaped what I kind of hold as like the most long standing standard of what I think is an amazing like metal sound, is the like the epicness of it all. So you had like Metallica, which I got into hugely for a long period of time.
Yes. I think everyone goes through that stage.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah. Like I remember when Saint Anger came out, and I was like jumping up and down, like cannot wait to get this album. I then got it, and I was like trying so hard to like it. I'm like, I want to like this snare drum. Sucks. Yeah, I know. That's like, why are they like recording this in a racquetball like arena? Like, what is going on?
When that came out, me and my wife were on our honeymoon in Disney, and they had Virgin Records there at downtown Disney. They did Midnight Madness for it.
Right.
So I stood in line and waited all night for it, and I was like, you, I bought it, got in the car and turned it on. I was like, oh, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, pretty much.
You see that you see that video I sent to you? So the guy has a keg, an aluminum bat, and he's like, this is the Saint Anger snare.
Yeah. A clown from Slipknot could have done this just as good of a job. Right, yeah. But yeah, so like when I listened to like S&M, you know, the orchestra that really kind of built it up and everything. And also coming from, I mean, my dad sang opera too and everything. Too,
oh,
so,
yeah, wow.
So it's like, so I had this huge like respect for like classic music and classic rock, but also like true classical music. Like I love like Wagner and stuff like that. Like, and that heaviness transcends like whether or not you have distortion on it or not, you know?
Right.
And, you know, I went through my phases of like being into like Godsmack and Korn and, you know, whatever was kind of heavy on the radio that I could finally Disturbed and everything. But like that orchestral thing, like carried on for so much longer, to where like now, like my favorite song of all time is The Book from Vader, you know, which
I was trying to find that. It's on Spotify, but you can't just play that song. You have to listen to that whole album. You can't just, at least on mine. I was trying, so I had to listen to it on YouTube.
Yeah, it's just the best of everything I like in metal, because so like I think the two big things that I love in metal music, and this is the thing that's always been hard to like describe to other who aren't metal fans. Is that like, so my wife, for example, she, one of my favorite bands, and it's honestly a lot of it because of the fact that she also likes it too, is like Avatar, from Sweden and everything. Like they're awesome. We've seen them 3 times, and my wife like jumps around like crazy and sings all their lyrics as she can and stuff like that. And it's weird that that's like the one band that she kind of gravitated to, but they're a very fun metal band, but they still have crazy Norse folk metalized like riffs and like tons of like classic guitar stuff going on. And like it's really fun for that, but my wife, oh, ultimately,
is that it?
Yeah.
No.
This is Metallica, isn't it? Or who's this?
This is Vader.
Oh, Vader. Okay. Yeah. So.
Okay.
Well, that's another thing that's kind of weird too. Is like my favorite song of all time is The Book from Vader, and I've tried so hard to like a lot of other Vader stuff. And I like a lot of it, but it's not enough for me to like get into like to where like they're like one of my favorite bands. But they do, in my opinion, the best cover of Rain and Blood of all time.
I haven't heard that.
It is like verbatim Slayer. But instead of like, you know, Tom Araya's like kind of shouty vocals, it's Vader's like that. Like it's just a super heavy, growly, like demon from hell version. And I love it. But yeah, so like with my wife, she, to give you a reference, her spirit animal is Taylor Swift. So aside from getting really into Avatar, she's very much so like a Taylor Swiftie sort of person. And so, you know, I'll be trying to show her different metal songs and stuff that are lighter. And she's like, I just don't like it when they yell at me about stuff. And I'm like, they're not yelling at you. They're yelling for you. They're yelling with you. You know, like that's right. The whole idea. So like, so with the book from Vader, there's this huge orchestral portion of that leads up to it. And then it goes into this super heavy, almost tribally sort of like drum beat and stuff. And so that's my two things. Like I love like the epicness of like the orchestral stuff. And then like the primalness of like this heavy groove, like over and over. So like my favorite band of all time is Meshuggah. But when I go and like work out and lift weights, that's like the last band I want to listen to, with the exception of like some songs like Combustion or Bleed that just have this really good drive.
Bleed it. Oh, yeah, my God.
It just has this huge drive on it. But most of their songs are just like, I want to sit and like listen and be kind of in awe of it. I don't want to be working out with it. But like a band like with the Book from Vader, or like a band like Gorefest, that or even Slaughter to Prevail, that have like these really like straightforward like hammering beats and just like this groovy, and there's like this like power driven like vocal set stuff. That's where I'm like, yeah, I just want to like, but like that's, it's like they're giving you your own anthem. And one of my biggest things of where whether or not I like a song or a band is if I feel like one of my guilty pleasures is pro wrestling. And
we're gonna get along just fine, man. Yeah. I love pro wrestling.
And my favorite all time character, which they did wrong many, many, many times over, is Kane. And just that whole epic organ playing, and then the end is just this freaking huge flame attired monster then, coming out, and they're like, I'm like, that's what I love. I love that shit so much. Yeah. And so like anything that kind of matches that sort of intensity, and when you're hearing it, like I feel like I am the guy that's like walking, like busting through the door where it's like, if I had one superpower, it wouldn't be anything for any good of humanity. It would just that every time I enter a doorway, some theme song would play. Like, that'd be the coolest thing in the world. But the stuff that I like in metal right now, in my whole life, has just been like, does it kind of check one of those boxes off? And like the newest stuff that I've been really into is the new Lorna Shore album, which is just insanely epically orchestral and just insane musical talent, with really good deep lyrics and things like that. And, you don't have to care about the lyrical stuff in a metal song to love it like at all, or you don't even have to agree with the message of the song, but when you do, it makes it really freaking awesome. I just love what they're doing with that stuff, and I'd feel bad if knocking this band, because I do like this band, but like Dimmu Borgir was a band that I really was into for a pretty brief period of time, but I appreciated what they were trying to do with the theatrics and like the orchestra and all that sort of stuff, but it was really hard to just I dig fully into it. I just never could get a long lasting grab on a lot of stuff. I still like a lot of their songs, like Progenies of the Apocalypse is great, but there's a lot of their songs where I'm just like, it just doesn't go as hard as I want it to, or as deep as I want it to. Whereas I feel like Lorna Shore did that concept of like metal plus orchestra plus grandiose and just took it and ran with it. And I feel like they just really nailed that entire idea of like, let's make this insanely complicated, layered approach of the song, give it a really good core meaning, and then let's put the most talented metal vocalist alive on top of it and just like have him do 20 different types of vocal styles at one time.
Yeah, that's so. Basically it. Yeah. I mean, I'm a sucker for theatrical metal bands. Ghost.
Yes, I love Ghost too. Yeah.
Behemoth, of course, you know.
Old when he school. Came out after the treatments that he had, and he had the hood on, and then just like threw it off, and was like, and he was bald and everything. That was fucking awesome.
Yeah,
Nurgle.
Yeah, I saw them at the Fillmore with who was it? In Flames and Arch Enemy.
Nice. Those two great bands.
And I believe Napalm Death was on that bill too. Yeah,
awesome.
Great show.
Very good stuff. But yeah, I think that anything that has like those layers of complexities and depth and stuff, like as much as I think that Will Ramos from Lorna Shore is probably, in my opinion right now, like the best metal vocalist as far as versatility, like on the lady led side, like Ginger, Tatiana, their lead singer, she has like three different vocal stylings.
Right.
I think it might be also coming from my dad's, exposure to me, like, oh, we need this person to be this part and that part. Like, so like, when you have like a vocalist that can do like three different or four different sorts of styles, it's like, that's efficiency right there. Well, I like that.
Yeah. Cause there are a lot of bands that'll do that, like two lead singer deal. One guy will do the growl, another one will do the melodies. But if it's one person, they can do it all.
I think it's one of my favorite things to do. When you take someone who doesn't listen to a lot of metal and you play a song that like tricks them up, like play Pisces from Ginger.
Yeah.
So, and it's like piano playing and like really soft, like it's like lounge music style. And she's like singing this really pretty, it's all about like a fish or something. That's why it's called Pisces. And then it just hits kind of heavy on the music. Like it's heavy, but like, it's not like insanely heavy. And then she jumps in like Vader style, like growl vocals and stuff. And just like, starts this is it.
Oh yeah.
It's just awesome. It's like, and it's truly beautiful. Like metal music doesn't all have to be like overly harsh or anything like that, but like, you know, it's still intriguing and stuff. And then it just hits off and she just rams this like really guttural like vocals right down your throat, and like everyone who doesn't listen to metal, they're just like, what the hell is going on? Like, that's not the same person. I'm like, it's not only just the same person, it's the same girl. Yeah. And I, like, my wife didn't believe me for the longest time until I showed her the video, like a live performance video of it, and she's like, I don't believe that's a girl at all. I'm like, oh yeah,
she's probably like the female Mike Patton, because Mike Patton can do a hellified melody and he just go right into growling and yelling. It's like, oh my god,
that's so hard to do too. Yeah, but they cut into it here pretty quickly. But it's just, you know, they're from the Ukraine. They don't get to tour around quite as much as I haven't been able to see them live, but I would love to. They have some really good songs in general. So
you know who I really want to see, and I don't think they've come anywhere close. Right here.
Oh yeah.
Oh shit, yeah, that's right. The same person.
Same girl. Yeah. So they're great. She's just really good. Dad. And they're a good band in general too. So,
I'm wanting to see Alien Weaponry.
Oh yeah, the kids from Australia or New Zealand. Yeah. They're great. I have a Pandora station for them.
Do you?
Yeah. They're really good. I like
love
them
to see them. They played the last Epic Fest that they had in Rockingham, but they opened the stage at like noon, right? And we got there like 11:30, but it took an hour to park. So I fucking missed him that day. I am cursed from ever seeing Judas Priest. Every time I have a chance to go see him, something happens. They were going to play that day. It was going to be Tool, The Cult, Yellow Wolf, Black Label Society, which I've seen.
Yeah. Zach Wall's great.
But yeah. I'm kind of mad at Zach.
I'm not that way with Judas Priest. I've seen them.
No.
I don't know how many times.
But that storm came through that day, and they had to evacuate, so everyone got shafted. We drove another 2 hours home, and we drove two hours there, and then we sat in the I think we got to see three bands, and right in the middle of Black Label Society, they cut the music, and they asked everyone to leave.
Then that sucks.
Then that storm came through, and then it was all canceled. We all had to drive home. It sucked.
Yeah, it takes a lot to make that stuff happen, I guess. I mean, like, you know, you can't blame them for having to cut stuff out. But you try to get to, like, my thing is, like, a lot of the bands that I get really obsessed with for a long period of time are not thoroughly touring bands. Like, the two that I really, really, really want to see, but they're Greek and Italian oriented, but like based.
Yeah.
And so just getting them here and they're not like, you know, they're never going to play on the radio or anything like that. Right. But it's Flesh God Apocalypse, which I absolutely love. If you are like a speed and timing fan, like, those guys are insane. And the fact that one of the main members of their band is a straight up piano player, not a keyboardist, like he comes on stage like with a full blown piano.
Really?
Yeah. And they are so fast and heavy. And their lead guitarist is literally like a black metal evolution off of a classical guitar, like riff. And he slows it down and just goes groovy as hell. And they also all play in like tailed tuxedos that look like they crawled out of a chimney. It's awesome. It's so cool. Them and Septic Flesh, which, like, I never had aspirations to be like a vocalist of any kind, but like, if there was one, it would probably be the lead singer / bassist for Septic Flesh. And they do a lot of great like orchestral stuff as well. But yeah, but just getting them over here in general is just, yeah, that's Flesh God. Yeah, this is the this is their biggest song or whatever. But yeah, again, orchestra heavy, and just the drummer is like if he doesn't have carpal tunnel like by time he's you know in his 40s, like, good job, sir.
We should go to Hellfest because everyone plays that festival.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you'd be wore out by the end of it though, because there's so many bands you want to try and go see. It's going to be impossible to do. Yeah. But everyone's played that. Javier and I have talked about trying to go to that, but I think it's in France.
Yeah. There's one in Germany too. I can't remember the name of it too. That's one of those huge, like, 70,000 people in the stands all the time, and there's like 60 freaking major metal bands that play it all the time.
I just want to be in one of those mosh pits.
Yeah, I want to do awesome. I want to do the Mon Amarth when they do like the whole Norwegian clap.
Oh yeah,
they do like the progressive like over the head like thing that they do in the soccer. games or something, or football or whatever, you know, what you call it.
You know, but, when I saw him at the Fillmore when they did the war song.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I didn't see anyone in the audience doing it.
Oh, they didn't sit down and do the oars?
No. I was like, what are you guys doing?
Yeah, I don't know, man. Yeah. I feel like of all the bands in the world, like Amon Amarth is got to be the easiest one to get into on the really heavy side.
Yes.
There's not a single, in my opinion, and this is full credit to Johan, there's not a single more easy to understand gruffled singer in the entire heavy metal genres. Right. Like if you clumped a bunch of random genres that you would call like heavy vocalists, he's the easiest one to understand of all of them. And it's like, you can literally listen to his stuff. If you just are trying to do Norse studies, like on like Nordic mythology, yeah. Like just listen to like a couple of Amon Amarth albums. You'll learn plenty from that because that's all he does. And they're super nice guys too. That was by far the best concert experience of my life, was being able to meet those guys and see their show and then get called out at the end of it on their encore and have a Scandinavian cheers said to us while hosting our beer in their horns before they finish it up.
That was awesome.
That is the greatest thing in the world. And he's such a nice guy. All of those guys are super nice. And I have invested quite a lot of money in his side hustle, which is Grimfrost, which is like a Viking themed like clothing and apparel. Like I have like, I have like, I'm not lying, like probably like 30 drinking horns and mugs and stuff like that from them. I have three custom Noda branded jackets from them that have like their Grimfrost helmets on it and all that sort of stuff.
Why aren't you wearing one today?
It was hot. That's why. So, I nearly wore. I had an Ulfnadar, which is like a berserker but a wolf. Yeah. So if you've ever seen the Northmen, he's an Ulfnadar more than he is a berserker. So like, they fight in a pack. You know, so he actually even says he's the Bjorn Wolf,
yeah,
which is the bear wolf or whatever. So
Olaf Berserker, girl thinks sexy. Yeah, so, yeah.
but I have all that clothing from them and all that sort of stuff. And
I didn't know that they had their own.
Oh thing. It's really cool. It's good stuff, and the products are awesome. I'm not trying to do a plug for them or anything, I mean, the guy is obviously very passionate about the music that he does. Yeah. He's extremely nice in real life. He's really passionate about beer, which is obviously a major check mark for me. This is the Raise the Horn song.
Yeah.
Also like the Grimfrost thing is like a legit business where he's just like, I want to preserve our culture and stuff like that. And he partnered with some people that like make really cool products for it and stuff. And we're either wearing I have like workout vests from it. And I also have, you know, have like the street, like jacket things from it. But then he also makes like tunics, like Viking era tunics and like cutlery from like that era and stuff like that. So. It's really cool stuff, and
you know, I wonder if those guys drink mead too. I mean,
I think they have to at this point. Yeah, so.
I mean, I mean, that's mainly what those horns are for.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. It's for mead drinking.
When I was down in Atlanta, we went to Viking Alchemist Meadery, and the walls were just horns with everyone's names on them from their club.
I love mead too. I mean, honestly, like I've only helped make mead one time. But if we had a wine license, that'd be the first thing I'd make.
Yeah,
is mead.
Well, so. We had a somewhat decent meadery here in town, but they closed. So.
Yep, actually, we have one of the guys that used to work there is one of my main cellarman guys. We're training him on the brew stand right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah. And I'm good friends with the guys over at Good Road.
Yeah.
So yeah, they made some really good stuff. I hate that they had to close down, but yeah, that was that's a style that, or it's a category of drinking that you don't see expressed nearly enough.
Right. I've turned into a meathead now, so
yeah,
I drink a lot of mead. Yeah, a lot of mead.
You say meathead?
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with either.
Yeah, that's right. Oh,
I do love me some mead. Do you drink the BK meadery stuff?
Yeah, bee nectar stuff.
Bee nectar. Yeah, I like their stuff. They do. They have a very craft beer approach.
Yes,
to the mead making process.
They're from my home state of Michigan. I went up there 2 years ago, and you know, you walk in expecting like this, and you walk in and I was like, this is it.
Yeah,
this is bee nectar. All right,
that's the coolest thing I think in the craft drinking industry in general. I wouldn't say just craft beer, and I mean, that's my main perspective, but I think that if you look at anything in the alcoholic industry, like everything's so relative.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, so one, like when we did, right after we won World Beer Cup with our Hop Drop and Roll IPA, like 6 months after.
Which
that.
Was one of my favorite beers of all time.
Thank you very much.
I might even say
it still is.
Yeah. I fucking love that beer. So, yeah.
It's still our number one seller.
Yeah.
But,
and you can find it everywhere.
Yes. And in 12 ounce cans now, too. But
just don't buy one that. At Snug Harbor.
Dude, check the dates on the bottom of the cans, please.
No, they charge $11.50.
Oh yeah, well yeah, we by law actually can't. Yeah.
Can't out of 10, he's like, no, it's $11.50. I'm like, what?
I can go to the store and buy a 4-pack of this for.
Yeah, people get mad at us bucks, for how other people price our beers. I'm like, we'd sell them at a uniform price. Like it's once they get to a store, it's what it is. But yeah, right after we won that, like probably 6 months after it, I think roughly. Sierra Nevada and Mills River did their big beer camp festival thing. Mm-hmm. And I got a chance to meet, I think his name's John or something very generic name, but he was the owner of Hopping Frog. And I love Hopping Frog stuff. Yeah. And I've been a fan of their big dark beers forever, like the Boris, the Crusher and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. They're out of Ohio.
Ohio. Yeah. And I went up to him. I was like, man, your beers are awesome. Thank you so much. And for doing what you guys are doing. And I was like, how many barrels do you guys make a year? And he's like, well, I distribute in 37 states and 12 countries or something like that.
Countries.
Yeah. He's like, guess. And I'm like, I don't know, like 55,000 barrels a year or something. For reference, this year we'll hopefully do like around like 21, maybe 22,000 barrels in a year. So I'm like, I don't know, like 55,000 barrels or something like that. And he's like, I make 1500 barrels a year.
Holy shit.
I'm like, what? How? Why? he's like, yeah, I just brew on like a 10 or a 15 barrel system and we do gourmet bottle shops only. And he's like, your state got like 2 pallets of beer last year total. And I'm like, holy crap. And I didn't even like kind of dawn on me. It's like, yeah, I never see them like on drafting. Right? I just see them in like bougie bottle shops and stuff like that. So you can see that. And then you can see places like New Glarus that sells in just Wisconsin and parts of Chicago.
Right.
And they'll make 500,000 barrels a year. So everything is kind of relative. You know, like we're a 20,000 barrel plus brewery and we're only available in North and South Carolina. And then you can look at other breweries in this exact same city that can make, I don't know, 3,000 to 5,000 barrels a year and they'll be in 9 different states. So it just depends on how you're doing stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's interesting because like there's all sorts of different approaches, you know, to go about it and everything. So it's interesting from what the company's goals are and like what they want to do. And it, I mean, it's the same sort of thing too, I guess, in like the music industry when it's like, you know, do you want to be radio accessible? Do you want to be on, you know, do you want to be world touring or do you want to like hold it to where like, if you're in the know, you'll show up to the show and that's where your contentment level is.
Right.
You know? So it all just depends on what your goals are, I guess.
Yeah. So. I mean, there's a lot of, if you turn on 106.5, you're going to hear Disturbed and the Red Hot Chili Peppers all day long. Half the shows that I go to, that stuff's not on the radio. Yeah. Sirius XM and Spotify is where I get a lot of my info from. So
yeah, that's where I've discovered most of the other bands that I'm really into now is from non-mainstream stuff. You know, that's great. It does make it difficult, and it's a way thing. You know, back when I got really into music, you bought the whole album. You signed on to the whole imagery. It was an entire like branding concept and stuff. And that's where bands like I said before, like we're Slipknot and Korn and Disturbed and, you know, Godsmack and those folks all kind of like took off and everything. And you kind of, you know, you have to invest so much to really get into something. Whereas like I can love, like I said, like my favorite song of all time is from a band I don't even follow. You know, like Vader, I appreciate what they do. And like, they have the single best song, in my opinion, that scratches all the itches I want from a metal song. But like, aside from a handful of other songs, like I don't even know what album that song's on, you know? Yeah. So while that's great that you can get that diversity from just looking on Spotify or Pandora or whatever app you want to do and everything like that and be like, oh, I'm really into this band. And then you discover like, well, actually I'm not into this band, but I'm into these songs.
You're right.
And I can add them now to my repertoire that way. And if they ever were to, you know, come through here, I definitely would go for that one or two songs and then the experience of seeing them live.
I would like to see them live. One thing about Vader that I've found out and I may have to listen to them more often. Yes, they got their name from Star Wars.
Nice. As they should.
And they're also from Poland. So
yeah, I mean, they're Polish.
I'm at Polish, so yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, they hit everything for you.
Yeah. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I need to check these guys out then. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're also one of my, like them and Gorefest If you ever get a chance to listen to Gorefest, like Question of Terror, yeah. Dude, literally his voice, he's very easy to understand too. He's like in Johan from Amon Amarth's like category of like really easy to understand stuff, but he's still booming as hell. Mm-hmm. He literally sounds like he's like some type of demon crawling out of hell, like singing. And him and the lead singer from Vader, I think are both like 6'2" or 6'3" and like 140 pound, like rail rot guys. Like they're like these super skinny guys. And then like, these massive, huge bellowing voices. I'm like, where the hell does that even come from?
You know? I found a band through Spotify called Ordos.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
House of the Dead. Holy shit, man. They're also from Sweden. Yep. But the dude comes out on stage with no shirt on. He's got a big old beer belly. Yep. And he just, welcome to the House of the Dead. I'm like, I gotta see these guys. I don't think they ever tour. I don't think they tour.
Some of them don't, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so like, yeah, this is Gorefest. They just... It's just mean, aggressive ass, like groovy metal.
I like that.
It's very sludgy. And so this is what I love to lift weights to and stuff like that. You just like, so like in, if you ever see me in a gym lifting weights, I swear to God, I'm nowhere near as mean as I look when I'm like when I listen to this stuff and I just get so into it and just get like, just, and I'll have like this snarl on and then I'll like go to some like, excuse me, are you using this bench? I'm sorry. Can I jump in? You know, like, yeah, I'll be like super polite, but like when I'm actually working out and then listen to this stuff, like I just get so into it. And it's again, it's that whole pro wrestler theme song mentality thing. It's like, or it's like, or like charging into battle sort of thing. That's like, that's why honestly, I think that the Amon Amarth show was like my favorite of all time. Not just because they called us out and we got to meet them beforehand, but like we were literally one row of people away from the gate to the stage.
At the Fillmore?
Fillmore.
Yeah.
So we were like, you know, like if Johan could have spit three rows behind us, you know, we were very close. But in that moment, and also like, I'm not a big, I don't really get into the metalcore flailing mash stuff.
No.
Like, I'm a human firework, you know, I'm just going to swing my arms around and punch people in the face.
No.
But I do love the pulsating, like massive body sort of thing.
Right.
And so that was like the epitome of it. And it really did feel like in that moment, we were part of like a shield wall. And it was just like, we're all in this together, guys. Yeah. And it's like, it's all but like, if we're charging into battle, sort of.
That's where all the energy is at a show.
Yeah, for sure.
I can't stand standing in the back. I turned 50 this year and I still getting fucking mosh pits.
Good for you. That's awesome.
I will never stop. You know, next day is a bitch, but I always do it. I mean, I got to feel that energy.
Yeah. It's a communal energy and stuff like that. And it's like, it's one of those things too. Like when it really wasn't the pit. It was more so just like the thick of it at the Meshuggah show, and everyone's moving back and everything pulsing and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, I had just gotten into the band, so I wasn't able to like, oh, that's that song. I'm just sitting there trying to take it in. Also, what was really cool about that is Jens, the lead singer, had the flu, so he wasn't even performing.
Oh.
So they're playing his vocal track over them playing with it, and it was amazingly good. And what was also really funny is they took a mannequin, like a t-shirt rack thing, and stuck it up in front to be the place of it. And they put his, like, you know, because like Jens has like the like frowny teeth, like eyes rolled back, Jens face. And they put that on the head of it, and they put a Justin Bieber t-shirt on him. And so that was the front man for the entire show. And there was no talking between any sets and all that sort of stuff, or any of the songs. And so you're just pulsating. And there's a portion of the time where I was like, my feet aren't touching the ground. And I was literally just like drifting around.
Wow.
And inevitably I fell. And as I would fall, like three or four guys would like just immediately grab me and pull me out. They're like, you good? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. You know, it is what it is. And they're like, all right, man, hell yeah. And you just go back out. And it's like, a lot of people think that those things are so violent. And more often than not, I found that most people are all there for the exact same reason. It's a therapy. And like, you know, if someone's foot happens to graze by your head, or like someone happens to bump into you, it is what it is. You're fine. But the vast majority of people there are trying to like keep everyone else okay, and equally trying to express safely their energy and all that sort of stuff. It's the one asshole that wants to like go and like dive bomb somersault into a crowd of people and all that. That's, you know, which they usually meet their demise from everyone else in the crowd pretty quickly.
Well, that happens a lot of like street punk shows, man. You know, you get those guys out there that just want to ram people and destroy people. I mean, I've got I've had fractured elbows at shows. I busted open my eye. I have a scar up here from the Boston show. I got a boot to my face.
My Boston's would be a good show to see. I've seen Dropkick Murphys many times.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah, I've never seen the Boston. So.
I've seen Murphys more times than I can count. Them and Flog of Molly.
Yeah, they're both great.
A million times.
When I moved to Charlotte, the CD theme songs that were going through my car constantly was Dropkick Murphys.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Which album?
Do
or Die, The Gang's All Here.
The Gang's All Here.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. That one. And, that was a good time coming in with that. There's random, albums that like capture certain parts of my life. I guess like this band, I do consider metal. A lot of people don't, but like Coheed and Cambria.
You know what? I saw them for the first time over the summer.
How were they?
Fucking amazing.
Yeah, they're one of those like classic rock evolved, right, like proggy bands and stuff.
I didn't think I would like the show. I got a lawn ticket for $12. So I went with my buddy Fernandez. And holy shit, dude, I was blown away. Were you ever in any thrash metal?
Not really.
No.
To be completely honest. Like I don't know. I always say like I'm a metalhead, but like it's really pick and choose, yeah, depending on what, you know, is going on and stuff like that. What I was really into. I'm a fairly obsessive person. So, I mean, which to get in this industry is like, you kind of have to be like, you don't accidentally end up in, you know, a head brewer spot or anything like that. You kind of have to dedicate a lot. And that's how I always have been. Like, when I was in like middle school and stuff like that, I found out what Star Wars was. And it was like, my parents were like, can you ever talk about anything else? Like, just shut up about it. I'm like, we can talk about metal music. Like, no, not that either. Just stop, please. But, so yeah, whenever I got into like a band or like a song or two or something like that, it you know, I only had like so much space,
right,
to like really get into it. And like, I don't know. There's certain things that turn me off. Like the one thing that, and I'm probably gonna get flack for it, but like one thing that I find in thrash music, thrash metal, that bothers me is kind of the oversimplified drum drive.
Okay,
bothers me.
All right.
Like the whole like the offbeat, you know, like snaring and stuff like that. Not offbeat, but like the every other downbeat like sort of snare style and stuff like that. You know, and the whole like just the sort of punkish. I've never been into like, punk. So right,
I'm a huge punk fan. So I was considered thrash to be like a mix between metal and punk. So
definitely
like Anthrax, Gone to Mosh.
Yeah,
I mean, I listened to Anthrax almost daily. When I was a kid, I had the I'm the Man EP on a tape, and I listened to that every day on my way home from school.
Man.
But they do a cover of Black Sabbath's Bloody Sabbath.
Yeah, which was actually my favorite Black Sabbath song.
Yeah. They do a killer cover of that.
Nice.
We just saw Anthrax on their 40th anniversary tour. Yeah. That was cool.
Nice. And it's one of those things where it's like, I'll listen to that over a vast majority of modern popular music. Like, freaking hate crap that's out there right now.
It's fucking terrible.
I've always felt like I have an old soul, but like my get off my front porch vibe has been really flexing hard in these last like 5 or 6 years. And like it's one of those things where it's like I'm just not super into like there's a lot of bands that like I appreciate what they did, like Anthrax is a band I appreciate what they did, Judas Priest is a band that I appreciate what they did, Iron Maiden I appreciate what they did.
Oh yes, absolutely. Yeah,
but it's also like one of those things like I don't go out of my way to listen to them either. You know, so it's like I'm just not one of those guys that like really it's like I don't like the franticness of it.
Yeah.
I like the composition stuff. So even if you listen to like a Lorna Shore song from the most recent album, it sounds super chaotic to most people, but I look at it as like this insanely detailed composition sort of thing. So I don't know, this is the whole punk everything is just like I appreciate what it does and I appreciate how it like plays into like the rebellious nature of music in general and being able to like go against the grain. But as far as something that I want to listen to in passing, like it just doesn't scratch the itches for me. So, but it's just how it hits my ear, I guess is the best way to put it. But again, it's like, I do appreciate how they worked into the fray of it all, but also it's like, so Lorna Shore is also, I hate to keep going back to them, but they're
that's
like the current top of mind, I guess. But, But they also do stuff that annoys the shit out of me too.
Yeah.
I am not a big fan of the pig squealing sort of stuff at all. Like, that's not my thing I like in vocals whatsoever. But because it's just one of the 20 Swiss Army knife vocal styles that he has, and just shows his insane range on stuff. I'm like, I can accept it for right now when it's on, because he, right. I know he's gonna dive bomb into like this insane guttural thing pretty soon. So it is what it is. But you know, like a lot of that sort of stuff, like, it's just not my deal. Or like not Whitechapel, but Suicide Silence.
Yeah,
like what they call the duck metal thing, where it sounds like Donald Duck singing the whole time. I'm like, I like a lot of parts of those songs until that starts squawking out, and I'm like, I don't know, that's not my thing. And it's just like Judas Priest and Iron Maiden, I think musically are freaking awesome.
Yeah,
just really amazing.
Those two vocalists are
and they're fantastic vocalists.
Yeah.
But for
that's what I'm gonna say, the vocals are just on point.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like they're on point and they're objectively great, but for whatever reason, for me, they just don't. They don't hit me the way I want them to. Mm-hmm. So like when I hear like Run to the Hills, the minute like any of the vibrato happens,
that's a generational thing too.
Yeah,
it definitely 80s is. It was the more the vibrato.
Yeah. And I can appreciate, again, it's the difference in appreciation versus wanting to follow and like get obsessed with it is basically what it cuts down to me. And like one of our guys that works here too is actually one of the founder's son. So he's a huge like Judas Priest fan and stuff like that. And he like randomly would come over and just like start vibrato singing around me. And I'm like, shut the fuck up. Like, get out of here. I came into mode with that whole like guttural thing, but it doesn't make any sense. Cause I grew up on all clean vocal stuff.
Yeah.
And the thing, and like my favorite, like Elvis songs are the ones that like are really powerful and vocally impressive. Mm-hmm. And so, and for whatever reason, I think it just might be just being a contrarian, like by nature or whatever. I just want to, I like my metal to have like this, like pseudo, like evil bad guy theme song sort of thing on with it and stuff. Like if you can't picture Sauron singing it in the front, then it's not equal to other ones in my mind. So, I don't know. I think that going back to your point with like the diversity of metal music in general, like to say you're a metalhead means nothing to me. When I talk to someone like, oh, I'm a metalhead, I'm like, okay, we're probably gonna disagree on a lot of things.
Yes.
it's the most diverse. Like saying you're a metalhead doesn't mean anything until you start listing the bands that you actually like. And you can like a whole bunch of very different bands.
Yeah.
But like there's also like I feel like metalheads need to meet and say like, these are the bands I don't like. And there's like, okay, we're not gonna be friends. We're like, oh yeah, we probably have more in common than not. But you know, like when the brewery started up, And the owner's son came in with us and like, oh, you and Casey are going to get along a lot. I'm like, no, we are not. as far as music stuff, we get along fine normally. But music wise, like we are both considered like the two big metalheads here, and we could not disagree more on stuff that we like, to the point where I'm like, don't play your shit around me. I don't play your shit around you. Like, it's to that level. Because as much as that sounds like it's animosity, it's not. Like I said, we're friends in real life, but it shows the diversity in what metal music can be, because you can just saying you're a metalhead doesn't mean you're going to agree at all on like what sounds good to you whatsoever.
So it's funny because, you know, back in the day, Judas Priest and Iron Maiden were considered metal
and heavy as hell, and
bands like Winger and Warrant were the ones getting made fun of. Now it's like, you know, we have Korn and Power Man 5000 versus I'm on our moth and Bohemoth, and it's almost the same thing again.
Yeah,
but it's not. And it's funny how you see all these music festivals and band like Godsmack still the headliner. I'm like, when was the last time they put out an album? I mean, I don't get how these bands are still headliners at these.
I think there's enough people that are my age festivals. Group, like, you know, like late 30s, early 40s that listen to them on the radio enough when they were in high school and stuff like that, that like there's enough people that still want to hear them. You know, it is what it is, but it's all the way down to the point where like, you know, I feel like there's so many times when I talk to people like, well, I'm a metal, a metalhead, blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, yeah, I like this. I'm like, you didn't hear me right the first time. Like, one of the guys I work out with a lot, he's very also like pop culturally stunted a lot. But like, he'd be like, he's like, I like metal music. Okay. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't at all.
You don't even know.
And he's like, no, I like a good Green Day song from here and there. And I'm like,
that's not
metal. Yeah, all right. Shut the fuck up. Like, that's not metal. I'm like, no. I was like, your eyes would melt out of your head if you listen to any of the stuff that I have playing on my headset right now. Like, so but the, like bands like Gojira and stuff like that. Like,
oh my God,
like,
I love
them. The average person listening to them thinks they would be like just insanely heavy. I'm like, these guys are like environmentalists.
Yes.
You know, like it's just funny how the range, not only for sound, but also like the messages of the bands are completely different. You have like people that have like anti-authoritarian, like satanic, like groups and stuff. And then you have people that are like trying to save the environment and the world. Yes. And like, it's just crazy how diverse it is and stuff. So,
but all those bands will be on the same damn bill together too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you get more people in the gate that way.
But
that's what also makes it hard too, to get to those shows too. Cause like, you know, it's like, do I want to go to this show for this one band, despite that there's 12 online. Right. Also, but that's the opportunity to really like a band. Like, hearing a band live is completely different.
Right.
It is. Experience than listening to it on your headset or whatever.
I have to have it. I've got to go to the show. So, Black Tusk is going to be here soon.
Nice.
Playing the Milestone, and next Friday, Obituary.
Nice. Okay. So, good to go, Gojira. Stranded, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes.
I love Stranded.
God, this song is shit.
Their guitarist.
This song, I get fired up when this song comes out.
The only songs about the lead singer / rhythm guitarist and the drummer are brothers, and it's apparently about like their mom like dying.
Oh really?
Yeah, and them feeling stranded.
Wow.
So yeah, it's again fucking cool ass message. Yeah. But when you first listen to it, you don't know that's what it's about. Yeah. But,
last time I saw him, I was blown away because he, you know, everyone's got their
phones out. And phones he told out. Him to put the phones.
He
down.
Did. Yeah, he said, "Hey," awesome. He said, "put down your phones and just live in a fucking moment, man." That was a great show.
Yeah. One of our lab guy, Anthony, he's big into metal stuff too, and he brought that up to me. I think he saw them live when he did that. So I hate that I couldn't go to that concert. So, but I always joke with Gojira like that their lead guitarist like has an effect pedal that is just a cat's tail that he steps on because he always almost so many of his songs have like a has like this like this pinch sound to it and it's awesome sounding but at the same time I literally just see this cat sitting on like a stool with a mic by it and it's just like its tail is like hooked up to an electrode or something and he steps on that when he wants to like get an effect going. So,
yeah. Well, never get rid of that image.
Yeah, right.
No. Now every time I listen to Gojira, I'm gonna think of that.
The best French metal band by far.
We've been getting a lot of good metal shows in town here now, man. Everyone's starting to stop in. Crowds are starting to fill in. The last few shows I saw was pretty packed, and I was very happy with the turnout. However, I went and saw Onyx in R.A. the Rugged Man at Heist Barrel Arts on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
That was embarrassing.
Really?
It was maybe 100 people.
Oh,
maybe.
That sucks.
And that stage that they have in the Barrel Arts place is not meant for a big act like that at all. They were, Onyx was out there ripping on the.
I do love Heist Barrel Arts, though, for what it's worth. Like, No. But yeah, and I hate that when like I went to see like it's not technically like metal, but like I'm a big fan of like folk music, so like Nordic folk music and some of that. But in that same vein, just very different, I guess. But like I like as like Tengar Cavalry, which is like Mongolian folk music. Recently, the Who got really big.
We
recently,
just saw them over the summer with Megadeth and motherfucking, I'm even embarrassed to say it, Five Finger Death Punch.
Oh yeah,
I fucking left.
They are so they are very polarizing.
Yes.
I used to be. I had the CD from. Do you remember Motograder?
Yes.
Yeah. So Ghost. He was Ghost in Motograder. I don't even remember his real name in Five Finger Death, but the lead singer for both of them.
Oh really?
Same guy.
Oh, okay.
So I knew Vimer Death Punch from Motograder.
Okay.
And Motograder was like Mudvayne Part 2.
Yes.
You know, like when Mudvayne did LD50 and stuff. And And yeah, they had they were named after the Moda Grader instrument?
No.
Yeah. So the whole idea is like the size of this table. It was like this, it was like a keyboard, and this dude made this, it was like a bass guitar replacement, and he strung two strings across it.
Yeah.
And put frets on the left side, I guess, and then like pickups, and he would hit it with a drumstick. And that was all the bass lines. That's why it sounded like their bass was made of a trash can, like when they would play. And so they named their band out of that thing that he made. And so it just sounded like, and just sounded like just, you know, like what you would imagine springs rattling off of a pickup board, you know, like a super bass or whatever. And like, but it wasn't like it was like all that resonance. It just sounded like metal clanging around and stuff. So that's how I know those guys. But that's it. But yeah, the lead singer of Moda Grader is now the lead singer, or has been forever, for Five Finger Death Point.
Okay.
Show, so. But,
it's almost in industrial.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so I got into Tengar Cavalry, which in my opinion is like the predecessor to The Who.
Okay.
Not the Who that everyone knows, but the Who H-U. Mongolia. And they're actually like a, like it was a like their lead singer, I think is from China originally or somewhere, or Chinese by heritage or whatever. And a lot of them are like historian, like students and stuff. Yeah. And so they're mimicking like, so, but they're really cool driving music. And I saw them over at the Rabbit Hole and after Hop Selection. So I had been on a red eye. So I hadn't slept in like 36 hours, and I got there, and me and like three other people were the only ones in that freaking building at like 11 o'clock at night. And I was like, I'm sorry, this isn't very indicative of the Charlotte music scene. Yeah. And they're like, what? And they just started playing, and we were just kind of like, I can't even stand here. I guess one of those things where like I was enjoying the music, but like, I can't just stand here in a group of three people, you know, that are so spread out that there should, you know, that we're not even standing next to each other. Right. And I was like, I'm just going to order a beer and leave.
Well, that's what I hate about a lot of shows in Charlotte is the venues don't promote.
No.
Right.
At all. Yeah. And if an artist is coming from outside of Charlotte, you know, they're promoting themselves along the way, but
yeah,
it sucks when you get to town and nobody knows you're coming.
Yep.
I forget what show we were part of. Or not, we weren't part of it, we went to, but we were going later for, I forget what act it was, but the Black Dahlia Murder was one of the first bands on, and there was no one at like the Fillmore, and they were like posting on their Instagram, like while they're on stage, being like, where is everyone the fuck at, blah, blah, blah. I wasn't there at the time because I was still working.
Yeah.
And so I was like, damn, like, I'm not a huge fan of their stuff or anything, but that's a big band, and like no one was there. That's insane.
I've seen it numerous times.
Yeah. It's unfortunate,
but I think it's getting better with the crowds.
Yeah.
Minus that Onyx show, but most of the shows. I wish other venues would get shows around here versus the damn Fillmore and the Underground all the time.
Yeah,
because of the prices and the beer. You know,
neighborhood theater.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I missed the fucking Slacker show on Wednesday. I completely forgot about it, but oh well. Yeah. Talking about Scott of metal show. Sorry. I think we're going to wrap up things soon. You got anything going on that you want to promote?
We're always with Noda Brewing. We're always growing. We're always doing new stuff. So you can't see it, but behind us, we have our 60 barrel brew house, but next to it, we have our 5 barrel brew house. And so at any given time, I have a series of projects coming out. And they all have different sorts of goals or intentions with them and things like that. But, if you've been in the beer market, you've probably seen the slurps out, the big slurp and little slurp. That's actually a big, year plus project that I've been working on thiol utilization, in beers and make a much hyper efficient IPA, which is the idea of efficiency and IPA don't mesh at all. But it worked out really well, and they've already been in our top sellers ever since our launch. And we actually are the first ever, from my knowledge at least, I'm sure someone will correct me at some point, but I'm pretty sure we are the first ever thiol-based IPA to win a medal at GABF this past year with Big Slurp. We won for experimental IPA. And then just a few months ago, we released Little Slurp, and it's been one of our top three sellers, and even in consideration with the Cheerwine launch that we did, which was a big thing as well. But the 5-barrel system has
been a lot of talk on that Cheerwine ale.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think our past three episodes, we recorded at Tommy's, and everyone drank one of those on the
I'm glad it's moving. Yeah. We've been brewing it like crazy. So yeah. it shows you too the power of name. You know, with those folks were really great, and they insisted on it being a craft beer base. So when we first started talking with them, I even said, I was like, why don't we just make a seltzer and essentially make it, or an F&B, and like, let's just make it an alcoholic cheer wine. And they're like, we don't want it to be that. We want it to be a craft beer base, you know, incorporating our flavor and stuff. So I was like, all right, that's a weird challenge. Cause it's like, you know, I always say, like, if there's a flavor component, you can work it into beer somehow. If you like chocolate, or if you like fruit, or if you like hops or bitter citrus, et cetera, there's a beer out there for you. And then someone said, like, make this soda beer. And I'm like, okay. You know, so it's a lot harder to do.
But, I think you nailed it.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. And they were very helpful with it across the way, and gave really good feedback. And so, you know, to do it American wheat with a ton of cherries in it, and then to have their flavor compound with no extra sugars or anything like that thrown into it, it's kind of a good intermediary between just making a soda alcoholic versus trying to make our own kind of faux version of their flavoring. It's right. They're like, no, here is the flavoring. So there's that. But the Slurp project is still one of our biggest sellers and stuff. And the Slurp actually stands for Superior Lupulin Utilization Research Project. So even though we'll put stupid fun graphics,
easy enough for you to say,
yeah right. There's a quiz on that later on. But anyway, in across that line, like, I'm always doing this stuff. So I talked about how I have the Lagered in the Woods series here now. And I also have a project going on called the Tabletop series, which is like codenamed Daddy Beers. Cause I just had my son, a month and a half ago.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And in the process of that, my wife and I agreed that we should have some more lighter beers on. And I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. So I've started this whole series of extremely sessionable tabletop beer ideas. I have the Provocative, which is a Vyshepny or Czech session, 3.2% Pilsner on right now. And then I also have a Belgian table beer called Table and Willing, which is a 2.3% Belgian peach beer. And then we're getting ready to release on Monday a 3.6% American Table IPA, which a ton of Nectaron, Mosaic, Sultana, and Strata hops. It's awesome. And it's called Atiba, which is American Table IPA. But we were doing a whole series with that.
There's not enough table.
No, there isn't. And they're really good. And what's cool, what's nice, and not to get on like a brewer soapbox, but when you're doing a beer that's, you know, over 96% water, you are challenged to still keep it into the style reference of what you're trying to go for, but you have to throw more complexities in that you normally kind of would shy away from. Like, for example, like an IPA or something like that, you'd normally not want to overcomplicate the mash bill because you want the hops to be center stage. But when you're doing something that's 3.5% or less, you have to throw some complexities in there, because otherwise it just tastes like nothing. You know, there's no foundation and there's no body to it and stuff. So it's offered a really cool challenge to me. And so we do that. And we're just constantly in flux for trying new projects out. And, you know, projects take a little while to dial in, but, you know, the Slurp took us a year. And it came out to be one of our best selling beers. The same thing happened with Radio Haze. It took me a year and 2 months to make Radio Haze what it is. And then we launched it, and it was a major, still is a major seller for us. So, just look out for constantly new stuff. I'm releasing new beer every single week, whether we do it in a major production and canned out, or if we do it on the 5-barrel system and do it just for draft only. So
I'm still trying to get my head wrapped around Monday. There's a release every Monday.
Yep. Yeah. So Monday's recently. We originally did it on Tuesdays, and I honestly did not even realize that the whole my tagline of "see you next Tuesday" was going to be a problem. So we shifted it off of Tuesday after a little while doing that, and then made it Fridays. And then it became, we did so many events on Fridays anyway that like Monday was kind of the weaker part of the week for us, so we moved it to Mondays. So. And also, when we're doing it on a 5-barrel system, we have enough volume that if we release it on a Monday and you can't get it until a Friday, it's going to still be there. When we first started doing it 11 years ago, we were doing it on like a 1 keg, was a whole batch. You know, now we have a 5-barrel system that's running it. So we're always doing something new. We're always doing something philanthropic. You know, we have like our stand up for the mod 2.23 right now on, and we do at least one, if not two, charity things every week to some degree. And every time you check out here, every month we do a different charity that it provides to. I think right now we're doing the Rise Up a charity. So every time you check out, you can round up and donate to them. So, you know, come on over and check us out. I know we're not the most adjacent for everybody out there and whatnot, but you'll get the best girth of the variety of flavors and new stuff that we're working on. And
you guys have a ton of stuff on.
Yeah, I think we have like 26 beers on draft right now. Wow. And, you know, we're always trying to do something new. We have our hop waters out right now, the Hop 2O. In rotational flavors, we're getting ready to release a mango mosaic variety of that. And, you know, zero alcohol, zero calories. It's just taking hops and putting it on some flavored water and awesome. Running with that. So,
hey, that's gluten-free, yeah. Isn't it?
It is very gluten-free. There's not a bit of gluten in it. So, but yeah, no, we just try to do something new all the time because this whole nature is, the whole nature of the industry is constantly evolving. So, yeah. It's great though for me because there's not a day that repeats. And, you know, it, when I look at, you know, making beer, I always think a lot of people equate it to baking because there's grain yeah. involved and stuff like that. And I get that, but like, I look at it as making music and you know, with this topic matter, it's very pertinent. That like, we have all of our ingredients, which like, cause that's all of our instruments. And how do we orchestrate that together to make a thing that expresses an idea? And like, you know, I gave you Hop Drop Ramon and Coco Loco and you don't need to know what the name of those beers are. You can get the idea of what Hop Drop and Roll is by drinking it.
Yeah.
You can get the idea of what Coco
Loco
is. Yeah, exactly. So it's expression and it's my, you know, I play instruments poorly, you know, and I tried my whole life to do. I played a little bit of backup guitar and stuff like that for my dad on stage and everything back when I was younger, but I'm not good at all. That like, I'm lucky that I found that the one thing that I can truly express my art through is this really cool consumable. And yeah, and it's just, our team here is amazing and we have a great QAQC staff and we're always challenging ourselves to do something that's innovative or something that's very throwback and reverent to a time that people are trying to forget or something, or not trying to forget, but they're just starting to forget, you know? So yeah. We try to do a little bit of all of it. So, and we'd love to see new people come to discover what we're all about.
Yeah. This is, you guys were one of the first craft brewers here in town besides OMB though, right?
We're right after OMB. Yeah. And, you know, there was more before OMB that didn't make it right. and shut down right when
Four Friends.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But there was also Johnson Brewing Company and there was Dilworth Brewing Company and there's South End Brewing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So all of them, you know, unfortunately didn't last and Rock Bottom was around for a while here.
Yeah.
But OMB predates us by about a year and a half. And honestly, like OMB has been really supportive of us when we were younger and as we got started up and when we went in together to change some laws and stuff together. We've always been good friends with them and I'm still good friends with a lot of their brewers and stuff over there.
But well, y'all have always been supportive of other breweries who are coming up too as well. So that's awesome.
Yeah, it's a good community. And it's one of my favorite things. When I was kind of promoting craft beer in here, I come from the medical industry. And before the brewery ever started up, before I even knew Todd and Susie, you know, like one of my favorite things about the industry was it doesn't have a filter on who can enjoy it. You know, you can be, you know, as blue collar as it comes, or you can come in there with a suit after a major, you know, multi-million-dollar like banking meeting or something like that. And you can all enjoy a beer and talk and hang out together. And,
yeah.
And the breweries all, you know, support each other for the most part. And, you know, like the way I look at it now is, you know, when we started out, it was just OMB basically as the only other guys in town. And we were very supportive of each other. And, you know, a month and a half after we opened right across the street from us, Birdsong opened up and we've been friends with them ever since the beginning. And been friends with a lot of the guys. It's hard to keep up now because there's so many breweries, but no one has.
Oh, you're
like
telling me.
Yeah. No one has like a massive amount of animosity or anything like that. Like you would expect from what would be quote unquote, competitors in the market and whatnot. But the way I look at it is that the more breweries that are here that are doing really good beer makes me want to do a better job. And hopefully it's the same thing. You know, like I hope that our existence here make other people want to make better beer and just elevates the entire industry and stuff. And everything again is so relative on like, what is the company's goal? What is it like? Cause there's a lot of companies here that just want to ride their tap room as being their main source of income and stuff like that. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with how you go about your business and stuff. And you know, as long as everyone's doing their thing and making their own spin on stuff, like more power to you, you know, so.
Well, I mean, you hear a lot of the pundits talk about saturation of the market, and I'm like, I don't think it's there.
No, not yet. I mean,
like, you go to so many bars, and what do you see? See Coors Light, see Miller Light, see Bud Light. Everybody's drinking those, so yep. There's plenty of room for craft beer to expand.
Absolutely, there's one, and you can go to other cities too that are similar size and see absurdly higher amounts of breweries around and stuff. Right. So, I mean, and some are going to fall off, and I think that is, you know. There's a lot of it has to do with a lot of X factors that aren't really that indicative of the overall industry itself, but it's alive and well here in Charlotte and it's growing and I think it's still going to grow for a long time and I'm just lucky that we get to be part of it and you know hopefully we'll be for a long time.
Awesome. Any shows coming up, Eric?
Obituary on Friday. Today is also National Record Store Day. So after we record this podcast, I'm going to go scope out some vinyl.
Hell yeah.
I'm broke, but I got to buy something. Actually,
I got a Browning record actually about a month ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Death put out like Best Of.
Oh, nice.
It's Red, White, and Blue splatter vinyl just for today. So hopefully awesome. There is one left when I go there. So I've become a huge fan of Death here as of lately. So
nice.
I love that whole Tampa, Florida metal vibe. So,
nice. Yeah. I got a Browning vinyl. My wife got a record player for us because we were big fans of What We Do in the Darkness.
Yeah.
Or What We Do in the Shadows. Mm-hmm. And the opening song of that was Norma Tejeda. And so we got a record player so we could play her albums and stuff. But she's super underappreciated. Yeah. It's a classic, like oldies. So I have a Clutch record. I have a
Clutch.
Yeah, I love Clutch.
I love Clutch. Yeah,
Clutch, Amon Amarth, and The Browning are my three metal albums I have for it, which I never get to play at home, especially now with the babies.
Oh, true. Yeah.
He's going to get worn out on Taylor Swift with my wife. And then when he actually starts getting interested in music, like, here we go, bud. Come in the car with dad. He'll take care of it.
There you go.
And then that day will come when they'll say, Dad, can we listen to something that we like?
No.
I tell them that all the time. I told my daughter because she's going to start driving next year. And I'm like, you know, I can't wait to sit in the back seat when you're driving me around and say, Brooklyn, can I hear something that I like?
Absolutely.
That's all the time. So
go ahead.
I was going to say, I was going to wrap it up, but you got something else?
I see. The only thing else, I don't have any shows coming up, but next week I will be at the Western Carolina Homebrewers Festival.
Okay.
Which last year was the first time it was open to the public, so based on a law that was passed. So
okay.
We'll be there again this year.
All right.
It's in Lincolnton, 29th.
Lincolnton. I'm on our moth. This is still awesome show.
I love this. Yeah. So great.
All right, man. Well, that's it for this week. Thank you, Chad, for being on the show.
Thank you, man.
Thanks for letting us record back here. This is awesome. Yeah, this is awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Adios.
Cheers.
We have a lot of interesting episodes coming up about music's most interesting topics, but we want to hear from you and what episodes you'd like to hear. If you have an idea for anything we should talk about, email us at mvisepodcast@gmail.com. This episode was produced by BWM Productions. If you like our podcast, please help us by rating and reviewing us on your favorite listening platform. And follow us on Instagram and Facebook at mvisepodcast. Come on and join in the conversation.